all the files of the whole park. It tells you everything.
Sir, he's uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
Hello out there in cyberspace. The internet encourages the best and absolute worst of human behavior. Online-led hate campaigns and conspiracy theories are often more than just frivolous distractions. They can ruin lives. In the U.S., I think the Gamergate movement from 2015 to 2016 opened a lot of people's eyes to what was brewing under the surface of some of the darker places online. And if that didn't, then QAnon certainly did. But, across the Pacific Ocean, the people of Korea had a pretty good idea of how the internet can destroy lives long before it became the topic of think pieces in America. That is the subject of the excellent podcast Authentic, a new show from Vice that focuses on the life of Korean rapper Tablo and how the internet ruined it, turned it upside down. And with us today to talk about it is host and producer Dexter Thomas. I'm Matthew Gault.
What's going on?
Sorry.
That's all good, my bad.
That was your name. I should throw to you right there. How are you doing?
I am all good. I'm all good, man. I'm happy to be here and talking about this.
All right, so what is Authentic?
Yeah, so Authentic is a podcast, obviously. So this is a project which essentially centers around this Korean rapper named Tablo, who, I mean, it's one of those things where it's sort of difficult to know where to begin. And even in the first episode, you can hear him struggling to introduce himself. So Tablo is, like I said, he's in the early 2000s. He was sort of this struggling underground rapper who, through a series of events, he became much, much more popular. And actually, he was at the top, really, of, you know, not only the mainstream in Korea, but actually there was a moment where he was at the top of the U.S. hip hop iTunes charts. And we're talking, he was, I think, oh my gosh, I want to say that Jay-Z was in number three, or Kanye West was in number three. And then, you know, he was above Jay-Z and Kanye West, right? This is what we're talking about, right? You know, in the 2009 to 2010. And then this rumor starts going around about him. So the thing about Tablo that was really interesting, that was kind of his hook, was that not only was he a rapper, but that he'd gone to Stanford. And, you know, and not only had he gone to Stanford, but he had graduated with a bachelor's and a master's degree in 3.5 years. So very unusual for anybody, right? And so and this is not exactly what you expect, you know, of a rapper. And so, you know, a lot of people found that sort of a compelling thing about him. And anyway, you know, in around 2010, this rumor starts going around that he didn't actually go to Stanford. And what happened after that, and you would think this wouldn't matter because who cares? It's a rapper. Who cares if he went to if he went to college or not and where he went to college? But this ended up being a huge thing. I mean, we're talking QAnon level conspiracy theory here. And not to give anything away, although you could read about this if you want. But I mean, you know, people went to jail over this. This ruined multiple people's lives in multiple countries. Interpol damn near got involved. It basically tore the country in half.
That was one of the wildest parts of listening to this, was getting to the point where, like, police get involved.
Yeah.
Over what is essentially like an internet rumor, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So let's put some more context on this thing.
Sure.
How long have you been listening to this guy? Like, when did you start? When did you kind of become a fan?
Yeah. So I every time I talk to somebody about this, I realize that there's no way to not just go way too fast, right? In the story. Because at first it's just, oh, cool. There's a rapper. That's cool. And I'm sorry, what? Police? What? So yeah. So Tablo actually is somebody who I wasn't listening to personally all that much, you know, as in real time, right? But I was aware. It's one of those things where if you spend enough time listening to rap music, period, if you're just really into it. So I was a college radio DJ, And so, you know, and I graduated in 2006. So Tablo's a few years older than I am, but not by much, maybe 3 years or so. And it was a name, and it was a group that I had heard of, but it wasn't somebody that, you know, it wasn't a group that I was a huge fan of, because I just hadn't been listening to that much. As I started getting involved with this project, that's when I went back and said, okay, this is this group that I heard of. Let me listen to it. And so I really, really dug it, you know, delved into it at that point. But the funny thing is, actually, this is sort of a sidebar. The guy who did the music for us, Kyle, you know, did all the sound engineering. He was in a group that Tablo knew of. And they were both in different groups that knew each other. They just didn't know, they'd never met before. So that was sort of a weird thing. Hip hop is kind of small.
Right.
If you know, when you really get into it, hip hop's actually kind of a small thing, especially people who make it.
So explain to me as succinctly as you can. I mean, sure. You've kind of taken like there's a 10 episode show that kind of delves into it, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But like, what is the event that is at the beating heart of this thing that blows his life up?
That's right. Yeah. So the best way I can put it, actually, is essentially, well, Tablo is, again, as I said, he was pretty famous because, you know, he's extremely famous at this point. But one of the big parts of his fame was that he is, you know, he has sort of this Stanford pedigree, right? And so he's clearly very smart, you know, speaks multiple languages. He's a published author. He's written, you know, books of short stories, all this sort of stuff. And essentially what happens is somebody starts posting in the comment section of articles about him saying that this guy didn't actually go to Stanford. I don't think this is real. And then an entire forum starts up. And so you could think of it sort of like a subreddit, essentially. So that there's a website. We can get into this if you'd like. But essentially, somebody starts an entire forum dedicated to the idea that Tablo is faking his educational pedigree. Right. And it's in Korean, obviously, but the title of it is Tajinyo. That's the abbreviation. And it translates out to essentially, we demand the truth from Tablo. Right. And it shortens down to Tajinyo. And so this thing at its peak, I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands of members and are in this thing, are in this one specific forum. And then, you know, there's other splinter forums and stuff like that. But what happens is you know, some core people think that Tablo didn't actually go to Stanford, and they start looking for evidence to support this. So they start doing things like analyzing footage of his old interviews and saying, oh, this thing that he said, that doesn't really sound right. And, you know, looking at his diploma, because on television, they'd sort of shown us basically a screenshot of his diploma. And so people are, you know, enlarging that and zooming it in on looking at it and say, hey, maybe this looks wrong. There's something wrong here. So it gets really, you know, people are doing research. I mean, and I'm using scare quotes here, but people are doing very serious research. And Why? This is happening again about 12 years ago.
Why does anyone care?
Yes. So was that rhetorical?
No, that was like, I'm genuinely asking, like, why does anyone care?
Yeah. So this is something that we actually struggle with a little bit in the podcast, because there's different answers to this, right? One is that a very surface level thing is that education is extremely important in Korea, right? Now, there are various reasons for why education is so, you know, important in Korea. You know, there's sort of the very simple example that I can give. If you've seen Squid Game, you remember that one of the main characters, I'm not going to give anything away, but, you know, you remember one of the main characters, basically his whole personality is that he went to, you know, I would say essentially kind of like the Harvard of Korea, right? That's him. That is his personality, and everything that he does is put towards sort of buttressing that image that he has of himself, both his self-image and then what other people think of him, right? Okay. Now, so take that Now, what we're not saying here is that there's something, you know, fundamentally strange, you know, about, you know, Korean society or whatever, because as we know, you know, whether you have a certain social standing or whatever, can very well make or break you in the States. That's absolutely the case, right? But the thing is that social stratification is extremely serious, and a lot of people really do view education as a way out of that. And as a way up, right? Whether or not that's actually going to happen or not going to happen, right? But the idea that somebody is faking their credentials or faking something like that, it can feel like a slap in the face. There's also sort of the added wrinkle that the legal system is a bit different. I don't want to get too far into it, but actually public, anything that's sort of a public document in Korea, the government takes that extremely seriously. So if you fake something like even like a contract, here people might not care so much because, okay, well, as long as you didn't actually juke anybody out of any money, you're cool. You know, you didn't fake anybody out of any money, we're good. But if you fake something, if you fake a document in Korea that causes people to lose faith in the integrity of documents in general, they will put you in jail for that. And so there's a few things sort of in the background that make it, you know, just slight different situations that mean that, yeah, if somebody fakes something, like even it seems as simple as an educational document, it's not a joke.
In the,
yeah,
the social media space is also more, I would say, more developed faster over there than it did over here, right?
So, like, absolutely.
Tell me about this website Naver, where a lot of this stuff kind of starts and then foments, and like what was going on in the social media space in the West at the same time.
Yeah. So, I mean, think about sort of where the U.S. and, you know, if a lot of the you know, viewers and listeners of this are, you know, from the States or, you know, spent time in the States, especially if you spent time in the States in the early 2000s, you remember that, you know, it wasn't the social media was very primitive back then. Right. I mean, Facebook came out around 2004, I think, you know, MySpace was still major for people. Frankly, internet, you know, development was a lot quicker than a lot of places, right? And this is specifically because, again, the government put a whole bunch of money and did a lot of investment into technology, into making sure that people would have relatively accessible, you know, ways to get online, ways to use computers and stuff like that. They didn't happen in the States, right? And so very quickly, you know, there was a site called Naver, and it's hard to say what it isn't. It kind of has everything. There's maps. You can order a taxi. You can order food. You know, all these things have sort of come later. But back then, it was very much it was a little bit like, you can think of it kind of like Reddit, if everybody used Reddit, right? And so there were forums for everything. If you're familiar with 2chan in Japan, same kind of vibe, but more developed. And I would say, you know, easier to use, better. But you know, there were forums for everything, from, you know, if you're into video games, here's a forum dedicated to the top video games that are out there. And so people use this really to connect to each other. And so in Korea, people got much more used to the digital being part of their real life than, say, we in the States here did. That the line between, you know, in real life and digital, It disappeared much quicker in Korea than it did in the States.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Okay, so then how does this thing go? This rumor, well, I guess, first of all, I want to acknowledge that it's pretty incredible to accomplish all of that at Stanford in 3.5 years, right? Smart guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
How does this thing go from conspiracy theory like online and get into, because it ends up being a thing that the whole country talks about, right? Right. It becomes front page news.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where things get sort of difficult, right? Is because this is where you sort of have to start analyzing. And so we do some of this in the podcast, of course, but essentially what happens is you've got people making these really sort of outlandish claims, right? I mean, it goes from the claims sort of range, right? Some of them are, hey, maybe he went to Stanford, but I don't think he actually graduated. Or to, I don't think he graduated. To, well, he didn't graduate and he's got some elite people backing him up. You know, maybe the CIA is working with this guy. Maybe the Korean elites are working with him. I mean, really just absolutely outlandish stuff, right? And what happens, though, is that these claims don't get, they're not confined just to the forum, right? Because if they were, that would be one thing. But what would happen is that, you know, major newspapers would report on this. Hey, there's this new weird claim happening on Tai Jin-yo on the forum. And they'd sort of report about it sort of credulously, right? Which is, you know, sort of, and in a way that what would happen is that they would republish these claims, and then people would be interested and say, oh, well, that's interesting. Let me go do some more research and check this out. And, you know, at this point, it was very much a, oh, well, you got to hear both sides. There's some people who think that Tableau went to Stanford, some people who don't. Let's hear from people who think that he didn't. And then you end up with people going, and then just, it's like leading people up to the rabbit hole, and then they go down the rabbit hole. And so this is what happened. But again, nothing like this had ever happened before. You know, and this is sort of the thing that is easy to lose, is that this really is, I mean, Tableau is, I mean, I would argue, is essentially patient zero for all of this stuff that we're seeing now. You know, with you know, QAnon, I mean, you can name it, man. All the conspiracy theories, the online-led stuff. It's hard to think of something, it's particularly in Korea, it's hard to think of something that went that fast and got that dire that quickly. It was, nobody had seen anything like that. And so I honestly think that, you know, the reporters who were feeding into this stuff, I don't really think they understood what was happening or how they were feeding into it.
Right. Because there's that thing that happens sometimes when you report on internet stuff, where you say people are talking about this for X, Y, and Z reason. We can't vet the claims, or sometimes you even say, like, we know these claims are false, but the rumor persists. We're talking about it. People are talking about it online. And like you said, it drives people into those information spaces. This was the first time anyone had seen anything like that. I imagine, like, nobody knew how to report on any of this stuff back then, right?
Yeah. I mean, think about people to this day. You know, if you say that you report on internet culture, people still laugh at you, right? Which is ludicrous. It is how, you know, and other journalists will, but also just people in general. It's just, have you been watching anything that's happened in the United States in, say, oh, I don't know, the past, say, 7 years, just to be very conservative, you know, no pun intended? But come on, man. You know, but again, one of the really interesting things about these spaces is, you know, I'm kind of on a sidebar here, but, you know, let's think about mid-2000s 4chan, right? Where they got really, really, really good at just getting, you know, local reporters to mention them. For a lot of people, that was the goal. Let's get some clueless, you know, network news guy to just say, 4chan, the internet group called 4chan has sent pizzas to somebody's, you know, or whatever the case may be, right?
They got Oprah, right?
Yes.
That was the big, big, big win for them.
And that was the win, and they got really, really good at it. So take all of that and take that to not just, hey, we want to prank people, you know, which is, you know, a lot of what was happening on 4chan back in the day. Take that back to, no, we're not pranking people. We are focused on one person, and we want to, I mean, people were posting, like I said, people went to jail over stuff like this because, you know, there were threats happening. People were making things that, and I should say this carefully, but people were making things that, in the opinion of the authorities, looked an awful lot like threats.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about this, because that like, again, I guess I'm just so poisoned by the way we deal with it in America, and the way that, yeah. Like, there's so, I remember when, like, Gamergate was happening, and yeah. There was a lot of local authorities that just didn't really understand what was going on, didn't have the basic understanding of some of the pieces, right? And, like, yeah. To this day, people still get swatted. And there's no, mm-hmm. Depending on where you are, the laws can be very different, which is so wild. So what's happening yeah. in Korea that is constituted as a threat?
Yeah, I mean, and that was something that they were, and this is where we get, you know, I start to get out of my depth, right? In the specifics of it, with regards to what is happening today, right? I can say though that what happened to Tableau absolutely changed. It changed a lot of things, right? It did change. I mean, the National Police Force, right? Actually started, as this stuff was going on, to take this stuff quite a bit more seriously, because, you know, even as developed as the internet was, stuff like this hadn't happened. And so things like defamation or things like threats, it was still a little bit, I mean, somebody's just saying stuff about you on the internet. Couldn't you just close your laptop, buddy? You know, they had to figure out very quickly that this actually is very real. Right. And I think they figured out that out quicker than we did. You know, they're very harsh penalties for things like defamation and stuff, even just straight up defamation. Right. Even not just threats. But it did end up with the authorities taking this stuff a lot more seriously. I can't necessarily say that they're doing a better job of it in the United States, or that it seems to be more cohesive or more coherent, I should say, or consistent. But yeah, it absolutely changed. It actually changed how they react to that stuff, because they had to in real time.
Right. Well, what were they reacting to? I guess is my question. Like, what were the nature of the threats at the time?
Yeah. So some of these things were basic, you know, sort of generic. We got to make these bastards pay, you know, things like that, which is sort of vague. But, you know, there were people and I also have to say, it wasn't just online. People were showing up to his house. People were, if he walked outside. So Tableau, for a better part of a year, he left the country for a while. That's how scared he was. So sort of lost in all of this is when things got really bad is he, and you hear this in the first episode, he posts, his baby daughter is born, and from the hospital, and he's not really aware of what's happening because he's been busy, you know, he's having a child. He posts a picture from the hospital, you know, like of the baby's foot or something like that, and just, hey, my baby is born, this is great, this is a wonderful magic moment. And then the replies come in and they're just, you fucker, why don't you tell the truth, why are you lying, you know? And so very quickly it escalated into people stopping him in the street and threatening him, you know, and saying, you know, you need to get out of Korea, you know, I won't say it here, but, you know, certain things need to be done to you, certain things need to be done to your mom, you know, things like that. So I mean, it was absolutely mentions of violence. Like it went that far, and it went that far very quickly, again, because a rapper allegedly didn't graduate from Stanford,
essentially because a guy was a great student and finished Stanford in 3.5 years.
Yeah. And we have to say here that, you know, we did our due diligence. We checked. He graduated from Stanford in 3.5 years. It can be done. It's unusual, but they have a program that allows you to do that sort of thing. And he really, honestly, the thing about Tableau, he didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
His parents wanted him to go to school at Stanford. He just wanted to get the hell out of there. And so he took his classes as quickly as he could because he wanted to go be a rapper. That's what he wanted to do. And he just, look, let me graduate, get my parents off my back. You know, I'm my own man. That's what he's trying to do.
That's an aspect of the story that really messed with me, was this idea that, like, you are doing this thing because of pressure from your parents. And then you end up basically being, like, trapped in that. You get it out of the way, get it done as quickly as possible. And then 10 years later, you're, like, trapped in that moment. Right?
Yeah, and that was sort of the weird thing, I think, for him, is that he kind of did it so that he could have, you know, he was a good student and did all that sort of thing, at least in college, you know, so that he could do what he wanted to do. You know, that for him was sort of an obstacle that he just had to get over so he could go be his own person. It turned out that when he went back to Korea, that people were really interested in that aspect of him that he wasn't particularly interested in. It was just sort of a gimmick. And so he was, you know, he's a smart guy. So he's just, okay, well, if they like this gimmick that, you know, I'm a Stanford graduate, you know, I'll use it for a little bit till I can get my foot in the door and then I can just do the rap thing. But it ended up being just this double-edged sword in the worst possible way, that the thing that got him in the door was the thing that, you know, ended up for quite some time ruining his life.
Yeah.
And his family.
You can talk about the impact on him and his life, because I think that's also something that gets lost when we talk about these stories, about these kind of harassment and conspiracy campaigns. We don't really, we don't always stick the landing on explaining, like, what effect this stuff has on the people that are at the center of it. And I think your show does. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's the difficult thing. Tableau's still dealing with this. You know, it's 12 years later. And the thing about this show is that the reason it's being made, you know, and people have asked, is, wait, this happened in 2010. Why now? You know, it's 12 years. You know, it's over a decade, right? Why now? Well, because he wasn't ready to talk about it yet. He'd done some interviews here and there, but A, he didn't like really doing that if he didn't have to. And which is fully understandable, because it was an extremely traumatic period of his life. And so we didn't do this remote. I went to Korea, I sat down with him, and I was in the same room with him. And it's traumatic to hear, man. You know, I've interviewed people in very bad situations throughout, you know, my work here, and this is up there. Hearing about that, because talking about it takes him right back to it. But no, this absolutely, you know, it affected the way that, you know, his family really hasn't been the same. He said, I don't want to, you know, there's some things that are sort of sensitive, and so I want people to be sort of fully ready to listen to it without being sort of blindsided by it, you know, in this episode. But, you know, there's some things that happened to his family, and there's some things that happened to him. It put him... And, you know, he was in a really, really, really deep depression for a long time. And, you know, it hurt a lot of people. It hurt a lot of people.
Right. People, again, I don't want to spoil the whole show, but there are severe consequences for some of the people and in this story.
Exactly. There are very severe consequences for people. And it's not even, you know, not a spoiler thing, because you could go read about it if you want. And that's the thing, is, like, there are articles about this. Wonderful, wonderfully written articles, but they were written at the time without the benefit of, you know, the hindsight. Also, we have done some extra stuff. We've, again, not to really get into, there's one thing that is a spoiler that I don't want to spoil, but it's more so that, listen, I hope everybody listening to this gets a chance to listen to this, but be prepared, because there's some really, you know, we warn you, but there's some really rough stuff in there.
Yeah.
There's a really, really disturbing things that happened.
Very strange and dark turns that I was that I was not expecting. What did you personally learn from this story, from reporting this out? Like, what are your takeaways about how disinformation and hate campaigns happen online?
You know, I'm I wish the answer that I would love to give you is, hey, man, listen, I've got this. After doing this, I have this 3-step program that we can do to prevent the online harassment. Like, I know how to do, like, I can't, I don't have that. I wish I did, right? But what I got out of this is we're not taking this nearly seriously enough. Because the thing is, what happened to Tableau could absolutely happen again. There's almost nothing stopping that from happening, right? And when I look at what happened to Tableau, you know, I see January 6th, I see anti-vax stuff, you know, I see all of this, right? And we don't really push that super hard in the podcast because I think it's just sort of obvious. I think it's easier to let, you know, I think as a listener, you'll sort of pick up on these things, right? Because some of our guests who we interview, right, they say this stuff. It's just, oh my gosh, this reminds me of, you know, the birther stuff, right? Which incidentally was happening around the same time. But also the idea of doing your own research, right? Which is what everybody was doing, right? This is, you know, I did my own research about coronavirus or whatever. You know what I mean? That's a, you know, it's almost a meme at this point. But this is precisely what people were doing. And I think that if anything, right, this show absolutely shows that this has been a sort of almost baked in problem to how we interact with each other online, and that we're just completely unprepared for it, which I think at the very least, that is the first step to realizing, to perhaps having some ideas on what we can do about this, is realizing, listen, this thing happened. It happened and we should have been paying attention. We weren't. Okay. Let's recognize that. What can we do now?
So the show is authentic. It goes into much more detail about all of this stuff. Where Yes. can people find it? How many episodes are out? All that business.
Yeah. So I think at the moment we're recording this right now, I believe episode 4 is out. Episode 5 should be dropping soon. But yeah, it comes out weekly. Yeah. I mean, wherever you get your podcast, perhaps the same application with which you listen to this fine podcast, you could search Authentic and T-A-B-L-O Tableau, and yeah, you'll be able to listen to it. But I would love to hear what people think. It's 10 episodes, 8 episodes of the main narrative, 2 bonus ones. I won't spoil what those are, but they're pretty cool. And yeah.
Well, Dexter Thomas, thank you so much for coming onto Cyber and walking us through this. If you missed the beginning of the show, it will be up as a podcast very, very shortly. You can hear the whole thing. And we will be back again a little bit later this week with another story about the internet, the space we live, and security, and all those good things and bad things. Dexter, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. It's always a pleasure, man.
Bye, everybody.
Easy.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.